Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan Ducross.
All right, everybody, what's up? Welcome. You are right now listening to the Sports Warriors with your boys, Sean and Tristan Ducross. And Sean, it's kind of a somber moment kind of this weekend. Yeah, Tristan, you know what? It was one of those things that you didn't think it would come. And it has come in this past week as the combat sports community, the boxing world, was struck with a little bit of sadness. And it was one of those things that you, quite frankly, knew it was coming, but didn't anticipate that it was coming, if that makes kind of sense.
Yeah, you really didn't want to believe that, you know, to lose a pulverizing figure like him. You didn't really think that at some point you could accept this. Muhammad Ali, for what he has done for the sport, you know, being a three-time champ, going through what he did, you know, you kind of consider him as the Rosa Parks of boxing or combat sports for what he was able to do. And losing him at 74 years old. And all I got to say is that I send my condolences out to the Ali family. And, you know, if anybody doesn't know what Muhammad Ali was all about, let's just get something perfectly clear. Up until a couple years ago, Muhammad Ali was still the type of guy that you could actually go up to his door and knock on his door.
Yeah, dude, we heard that story while we were at the Access Media event that we'll talk about later on in the show. Well, it's just that what a still humble being this guy was from the start of his career to the end of his career. And when you look at what he did for the boxing community, something that was undeniable. What he stood for as a person was undeniable. And the stuff that he did, I mean, for the change his name from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali because he transitioned to Islam belief, for him to put his belief forward in an era that was not accepted by a lot of people was a huge monumental step in this guy's progression as a human being and a person that many people looked up to.
You know, you see all the posts on social media, all the tweets, and when his passing went, it did not go unnoticed by anybody. You know, everybody was coming out of the woodworks. Like, you couldn't believe it. Like, when I saw that Muhammad Ali was in it, we were at the Access Media event, and we were sitting there, and we were sitting at a round table, and everybody was looking at each other because Manil Ranella was there, and he got a message, and I just stopped the whole room and said that he just wanted to let us all know that Muhammad Ali probably isn't going to come out of this. And we all just kind of sat back and we reminisced about the life of Muhammad Ali and what he meant to all of us and why we're all here and doing what we're doing. You know, whether it's us talking about combat sports or, you know, whether you see GSP or Mike Tyson doing the footwork, you know, Muhammad Ali, it's kind of resents it. Not to take anything away from it, but, you know, I kind of look back in like what Michael Jackson did for the music industry.
Yeah.
That everybody took a little bit of pieces of him and in their music videos or in their performance.
Well, the good thing,
same thing with Muhammad Ali. He transcended the sport.
Yeah, and the good thing is to talk about taking little bits and pieces from everybody in whatever aspect you are in, whether it's combat sports or whether it's music industry. It doesn't really matter. When you have icons of such big magnitude, there's something that transcended that generation. And when you go back and you watch UFC 199, you saw just that. There was some distasteful things that UFC did that I didn't agree with in sense of comparing John Jones to Muhammad Ali.
Right.
That was, to me, one of the disrespectful aspects of it. But when you go back and look and you see the movements of Anderson Silva, the underwater photos of the John Jones or Cyborg Justina, the list goes on. The evolution is there of what he did for the fight community and the era that you wanted to embrace everything that he did and changed and altered. One of my favorite pieces that I think I've ever seen was that I wish I could remember who the clip was against, But when you see Ali against the ropes, when he donned the rope-a-dope, and he's
George Foreman.
And he's sitting back there, and he's going all around the place, and the guy can't even hit him with a two-foot oar. It's the precision and the technique that he did that you'll never see across anything.
He was what boxing and a traditional boxing person was. He was able to trash talk. He was able to articulate sentences that nobody else could. And that's what made Muhammad Ali the greatest person that he was. And for something that doesn't really happen in this day and age is that even on his outgoing, you know, I just want to say that, dude, Muhammad Ali, you're no longer fighting a struggle. You know, Layla Ali said it best. Her dad, she watched her dad just deteriorate right in front of her, and she said that every single time she was asked, "How's your dad? How's your dad?" She would hold up her head high and say that dad's doing fine, but she knew that her dad was no longer doing good. She knew, and she said that all she could think of was that her dad, the fight, that her dad was losing every step of the way, never gave up that fight. His body gave up that fight.
And that's the thing.
Until the end, his heart was still beating.
He was one of those pioneers and the evolutions of humanity when you could fight at another level that was untested, unparalleled. And yes, I know people probably don't want us to talk about too long about Muhammad Ali, but he deserves this. And the thing that I come back to is that Parkinson's disease is one of those things that just eats you alive from the inside out. And it's one of those diseases that is genetically part of your genes and not something that people said wasn't done because of the boxing. But how much of boxing added to the Parkinson's disease that deteriorated him? Because it started from the brain. That's where it starts from. So you're wondering that you get flashbacks. Go back to the throw in Manila versus Joe Frazier 3. 15-round fight. Wherein which Muhammad Ali went into his corner and told his corner, "I'm not sure if I can go anymore." Then Frazier told his corner, "No mas. No mas." He was done. The end of the fight. Muhammad Ali turned around at his corner and said, "Good, because I was going to quit." At that point, he said that he felt like he knew what death was. At that point forward, that when you hit a guy, that he said with every ounce of his power, and Frazier didn't go down, he hit him as hard as he said he ever hit anybody else, like he hit George Foreman. And Frazier stood there and took everything he could possibly give him. And what was one of the most brutal boxing bouts in the history of boxing. You're wondering how much that physically took a toll on his brain that maybe led to the gene of Parkinson's to come out. You hope that at one point that Parkinson's disease, they find something to kind of alter it. Because it's not something to lose sleep over. It's not something that you want to see anybody else get beat. I mean, you see Michael J. Fox going through it all the time.
Right.
And at some point, you just want to see that find a door where somebody breaks it down as a doctor says, "Yes, you know what? I helped defeat this disease." Because it is just horrific. Just like ALS. Those two diseases, it's heart-wrenching to watch people go through.
And how it just depletes you.
Yeah. So for that, I send my condolences out to the family. And wish them the best in their recovery and their future. And it's going to be interesting to see how much the boxing community honors this guy in the go-forward basis just because of everything that's going on. And I don't think that this is going to be it in terms of how they're going to honor him. They announced today the funeral arrangements was all done prior. the funeral arrangements, the funeral, the way that it's going to look is to the T of what Muhammad Ali wanted.
The fact that Muhammad Ali wrote out everything about how he wanted his funeral to be laid out, incredible.
And the other news that came out was that also, what's his name? Will Smith was announced that he was going to be the pallbearer for the funeral, who portrayed him in one of his films. That's cool. And then Lennox Lewis will also be there. The boxing community is going to support Muhammad Ali and his family until the end of time. For everything that is going on and when everything that is going to happen now in the next couple of weeks, they're going to honor him. So it's going to be an interesting. I bet you 10-1. I would not be surprised if UFC 200 does something even a little bit bigger in honoring Muhammad Ali before the show or during the show. Because they got this news during the show. So we'll see. Well, actually not during the show, a couple days before the show. So we'll see how this goes. In the meantime, you're listening to the Sports Warriors right here on YouTube.tv and Blog Talk Radio. We're your boys, Sean and Tristan Ducross. And coming up next, Sean, destiny fulfilled at UFC 199. Are you kidding me? More with the Ducross Brothers Sports Warriors up next.
Excelsior, Imperius Rex, live long and prosper, up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to FanboyNation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the Ducross Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the Ducross Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com. All right, everybody, we are back. You're listening live right now to the Ducross Brothers, one of the realest, most rawest opinion combat sports talk shows out there on the airwaves right now. I'm Tristan Ducross, along my side, as always, my partner in crime, the one and only, Sean Ducross. Tristan, UFC 199 went down as one of the biggest pay-per-views for UFC, and it shocked me because at the beginning of the week, I was like, man, UFC 199, you kidding me? There's nothing on UFC 199 that kind of struck me out. I was like, yeah, let me go ahead and get it. But boy, it shocked me that when we watched the prelims, it's like, it set the trend. It was like, you know what, dude? This is going to be legit. This is going to be one of the better fight cards from the prelims. The ones that stood out for me was that Alex Caceres defeated Cole Miller on 10 days rest, even though he started to kind of gas out towards the end of the fight. But at some point, if you're Cole Miller in that fight, you're getting worked over and over by a striker, and you are a world-class grappler, get the fight to the mat.
We were all yelling at Cole Miller to try to actually, I don't know, do something that was relevant to his game plan, but yet he could not. So when I'm looking at Cole Miller, he's been in the game for years. For him to give that kind of performance, it left me kind of wondering what's left for him. But then again, that kind of left you wondering about Dan Henderson or Uriah Faber.
Well, it also left you, once you get past all that, yeah, you get into the main card and you have all those questions. But you develop that question early in the prelims when you look at Jessica Penney versus Andrade. When you look at that fight, you wonder how much Jessica Penney still has in her tank after the destruction she suffered at the hands of Joanna JJ.
Dude, she has not been the same since Double J took her to the woodshed. And I ain't talking about Double J, Jeff Jarrett from WWE time, the guitar-wheeling maniac. No, 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 not talking about him. I'm talking about the girl that has mean fists for striking.
For her to dissect Jessica Penney the way she did, you look at Jessica Andrade, what she did, I'm trying to think, and watching the videotape, and over and over, and all I can think about is, where was Panay's striking defense. Because for her to continue to get shots and she had no defense, no defense to any of the stand-up striking game, wouldn't you at some point think, hey, I got to get this to the ground because my stand-up can't match this?
Well, that was the theme of the night when it came to certain individuals throughout the course of the evening, was that at some point in time, if your striking's not there, you've got to try to your best to get the fight to the mat. When you're taking a beating like Panay took, like I haven't seen a woman hit like a Mack truck in a long time, but Andrade hit like a Mack truck. Every punch she threw was like she was trying to break through a brick wall, and it was at the hands of Jessica Panay. You're wondering at the end of the day, what's going to happen to Jessica Panay? Because if it's me, she's not the same. So don't stand there and take a punishment like that ever again and wondering, well, here's what's going to happen. There's no point for her to go ahead and stand there and take that amount of punishment and go ahead and still try to come back. She was afraid to engage in that distance. She had the reach. Tristan, she had that reach, and she was afraid to getting in that pocket or trying to establish any type of jab or distance in that fight. And also, let's just put this out there, too. Jessica Andre, Sean, she dropped two weight classes to take this fight against Jessica Panay. And Panay was, for years, Sean, was the main woman fighter, remember, Sean? That everybody was talking about that she was going to be the next person to step up her game, to evolve, to move on in the weight class. But yet here, she can't seem to find herself. She can't seem to adjust on the fly. She can't seem to grasp what it means that these girls that are standing right in front of her have more power,
yeah,
more advantages. And last time I checked, the key to anything is that you have to evolve as a fighter. And if you don't evolve in your striking, you don't evolve in your striking defense, and the one claim to fame is that your ground game is okay, what in reality gives you the okay that you think you can stand there toe-to-toe with somebody like Jessica?
Well, here's my question for you then, Tristan, and Fanboy Nation and Fightbook MMA that's in the chat room right now. If you want to join us, come join the chat room. Here's my question to them, or anybody that's listening to me that wants to join in the chat room right now. Here's my question. Should Jessica Panay continue to fight on a UFC card, or due to the fact that she got beat so bad by JJ, so bad by Jessica Andrade, should she think about dropping out of the UFC right now and going to rediscover herself?
And Invicta.
And Invicta. That's where I'm thinking that she should go right now, is regather her mentality and go over to Invicta and see if you can get your mindset right. Because sometimes when you take that punishment, you just can't undo yourself mentally.
Yeah.
Just like we're wondering about what the outcome is going to be with Rory McDonald when he comes back.
Dude, okay. I was just going to segue right into Rory McDonald real quick, because you see, even Robert Sommo of Family Nation says that Jessica Panay looked defeated already walking to the ring. Physically, demeanor, yes, I could see that. But you were saying that you might want to take a step back, Jessica Panay, and think about Invicta. But how? How does Rory McDonald get blasted by Robbie Lawler, probably the fight of the century, and he's relegated to a fight night, a free TV card? He's relegated to that. You want to talk about moving, taking a step back? That's a slap in Rory McDonald's face.
Well, when you got to come back and you've been gone for a year, it kind of makes sense, Tristan. Because you don't know what type of fighter you're going to get from Rory McDonald. But one thing you do know, what you're going to get against Dariush versus Vic was exactly what you were wrong about with. You said, I'm going to go James Vic. My wife and I said, we're going Dariush. The last time that somebody tries to use Dariush as a stepping stone, he got blasted. James Vick tries to come in, and as you said, looks like a Stefan Struve version 2.0, soft chin.
Dude, that's an understatement.
I was watching that fight, and I saw him coming out, and I was like, boy, he sounds like Stefan Struve.
Straight up, chin out.
Right. No tucking of the chin, nothing, and I'm watching this guy, and I'm going like, dude, this ain't going to end well at all. And all of a sudden, he clipped right on the chin, done. I was like, oh, glass chin.
But the thing,
Stefan Struve versus 2.0.
But the thing, though, about the knockout was the fact that Dariush basically put his hand,
palmed
pushed
him.
And then just unloaded. And what was it? It was the highlight reel all across. And the thing from Fox Sports was so funny because boom, headshot. It's like watching video games because Firebook said it earlier. You got Alex Calcera, who is being called as Bruce Leroy. Remember, I forgot what game it was. But when everybody would run through this little game on the computer and go, Bruce Leroy.
Right.
Then all of a sudden you have, boom, headshot. It was that type of theme all night long about what was to come from the main card. And when you get to the main card, evolution. It's evolution. It's what it's all about, folks. You take your game up. You work hard for something that might not be given to you. You might claim that it's destiny. You might claim that this is your era. And that, my friend, is exactly what Dominic Cruz did. That is exactly what Michael Bisping did, where pretty much damn near broke the internet when Michael Bisping destroyed Luke Rockhold in T-minus 2 seconds. But let's just put a pause on Luke Rockhold real quick, because I'm going to bring a situation that I'm aware of, but we're going to get to that here in a few minutes. But You got Max Holloway that showed up against Ricardo Lawless. And Max Holloway deserves a title shot
after his
performance. Absolutely. When you can stand there in front of Ricardo Lawless and put on a clinic of striking on how it's supposed to be, and then at one point you point to the ground and say, let's dance right now, and then you oblige in the last, like, minute? Like, who does that? You're risking an opportunity of getting knocked out and losing an opportunity at a title fight. But yet you're going to tell a hard striker, Ricardo Lamas, yo, step up to the plate. Let's go to war. Those two fools swung down like guys going outside in a ballroom brawl. Like, what are you doing?
But find the old dive bar, piss off a biker, go out and get into a Donnybrook. That's what you got.
Yeah, and that's exactly, to know that that's in Max Holloway's DNA, that's what he's going to bring to the fight game every time, is something that you're going to want to see as a head. And Max Holloway deserves his opportunity at a title shot. And the fact that he's ran off nine straight. Yo, Jose Aldo, Frankie Edgar, whichever one of you guys wins that fight for that interim title at featherweight, you best be on your best behavior, because Max Holloway's one pissed off Hawaiian who wants his title opportunity. You do not want to fight this guy on his home turf.
Ain't that the truth?
If you go ahead and this fight happens in Hawaii,
all bets are off.
You want to see a home field advantage? Hawaii's going to go H, and then that's going to be end all of end all. Because he's going to feed on the Hawaiian and just go bonkers. You think that him standing in front of Ricardo Lamas was insane? He will stand there and die in front of these people too. So you've got that coming forward, and then you got the most puzzling fight of the evening: Dominic Cruz versus Uriah Faber. What the hell? I could not have been more confused by this fight than I've ever been watching a Dominic Cruz fight. Okay? Dominic Cruz, I love your nickname. You're the Dominator. You sure dominated Uriah Faber. But why are you afraid to finish a fight? Because you had him finished twice. And you were afraid to finish him with the fact that he would get back up and knock you out? When you look at everything and you see what's going on, if you're getting out-striked on your feet and you can't strike or even touch another fighter? Regroup and assess the gameplay. Why was this fight even still standing is beyond me. Uriah Faber has the ability to score a takedown. Yeah, he's short of the two fighters. But at some point, get in the pocket, swing for the fences, or shoot for the takedown. You had nothing to lose after the first round. First round, you gave it to Uriah Faber. I gave it to Dominick Cruz. At some point after round three, when you get to round three, you need to assess the situation. And if your corner says you're down and you need to go for broke, go for broke.
I love when the corner says to Uriah Faber, you're done. You're down. Go out there. Leave it all out there on the line. Finish it. And you go out there and just lollygag? Are you kidding me? And on top of that, Dominic has the guts to walk to the cage and go, I'm up. Like, when Dom has that kind of reaction, and you know you're absolutely outclassing your person, your fighter, and nobody can come close to you. Nobody in the game makes on-fly adjustments like the Dom does. He is the most awkward-looking fighter I've ever think that stepped in the octagon. And I guess Fightbook agreed with you, Tristan, that Faber looked good in the first round. He looked okay, but I don't know what transition, what happened, unless he went back after round one and said, he is quicker than I thought he was. He hit harder than I thought he did. What do I do next? And then that point forward, the game plan just disappeared. So the question begins, what's next for Faber? Before we get to Dominick Cruz, what's next for Faber? Faber at 37 years old. He has to now go back and think about what his career means. Because Uriah Faber, as much as I wanted this kid to win, to shut the mouthpiece up of Dominic, you have to strongly think long-term health. Because when you're that slow and you're that sluggish, what in the right frame of mind think that you can take on a contender? At this point of his career, he is no longer a title contender. He has no aspirations of being a title contender or a title holder.
No, considering that he put over Garbrandt on the fight after he won.
Right. No love, Garbrandt is going to take that title. Okay. Let's just throw out everybody out of the woodworks.
Just because it's Team Alpha Male.
Right. Team Alpha Male, greatest thing since sliced bread. Y'all can't win a title.
You know, Team Alpha Male is like the NWO.
Just NWO keep adding more and more members?
No. What it was is that when NWO first started with Scott Hall and Cash, they were the big thing. Everybody wanted to be a member of Team NWO.
Then they split off to Team Wolfpack.
And then when you look at it,
Jay Dillashaw,
when you look at it and you go ahead and you see that, Alpha Male became that. They became the NWO UFC. Everybody wanted to join Team Alpha Male. That was the ish. That's where you wanted to be. And then, yeah, Tristan, nobody heard it because you whispered it. But then Dillashaw leaves to go ahead and join what I guess you could classify as the NWO Wolfpack.
Good name. Good name.
And he's part of another echelon of the group that is rising to the occasion, even though he lost to Dominick Cruz. So everybody in the faction of the Alpha Male is falling off. At some point in time, you've got to realize that you may have to change up camps to better put you in a position of success. If you're not placed in a better position to be successful, you're in the wrong sport. What's happening with Team Alpha Male? The people are so loyal to Uriah Faber, it is ridiculous. It's like watching Hulk Hogan all over again. Uriah Faber gets recognition like it's going out of style in whatever city, especially in California. Hulk Hogan got the Hulkamaniacs running wild everywhere. Same thing. At some point, you got to learn when enough's enough and pull away. Uriah Faber, there's nothing there left. Ask me, what's left for Uriah Faber? There's only two scenarios that is even logical in my eyes. One is that Uriah Faber must retire.
There's no question. There's no doubt at this point in time, by Uriah Faber's body of work and where he is at 37 years old, there's no more play for this guy. There's none. Uriah Faber had his one last-ditch hope. That was against his former foe in Dominick Cruz, and he got outclassed. I've always said, if you get outclassed that bad, that dramatic, you don't belong in the octagon anymore. Whether it's boxing, MMA, it doesn't matter. If you get outclassed so bad that you are left questioning whether or not you don't belong, or now you're trying to figure out a little bit of soul searching. I'm sorry, your time has passed.
Yeah, and the only other
step aside,
and the only other fight that would make sense that if he was still to stay, would be that the TJ Dillashaw fight. But TJ Dillashaw is going to fight Rafael Sentau coming up at 200.
Which by far is going to be a great fight.
Yeah.
Great fight. If I'm TJ Dillashaw, I'm laughing at the thought that Uriah Faber's name comes up with him being inside, going against him in the cage. I laugh at that thought because TJ Dillashaw and Uriah Faber, you saw what happened against Dominick Cruz. There ain't no way these two are even in the same era, let alone the same class. TJ Dillashaw would just run around circles around him all day. If that's the Uriah Faber that comes out. You know, our buddies from Fanboy Nation says that he should go up to the 145 Uriah Faber.
For what? So he can get smashed?
Even 10 times worse? Like, he really beat Conor McGregor, Jose Aldo, Frankie Edgar.
The list goes on.
There is nothing that he can go ahead and do. He did a lot for the sport. He did a lot for Southern California. But there's not a lot left in that tank. What was surprising that there was still stuff that was left in the tank was Michael Bisping.
Right?
I mean, you can ask our boys from Fight Book MMA. I'm still waiting for it, Fight Book, for Pat Griffin over there to announce that I am the GOAT, the greatest of all time, the bold predictor, the guy that's not afraid to go out on a limb and shoot for the stars. A guy that's not afraid to shake up the world. Because I said, don't be surprised if Michael Bisping wins. Michael Bisping, okay? People ask me, why do I hate Michael Bisping? I don't necessarily hate Michael Bisping as much as people claim to do. I just speak truth, okay? Because the way I saw Michael Bisping coming to his fight, did I think he had a chance? Absolutely, I thought he had a chance. But let's be real, folks. Outside of the United States is where he had his claim to fame. Anywhere but the United States, he had success. If you're going to deny that, okay, that's your opinion. This guy hasn't won a fight in the last couple of years that was relevant. But yet when you continue to build yourself, and yet you still kept talking about that you wanted this title shot against Luke Rockhold because you believe Luke Rockhold owed it. And whether it was 10 weeks, 2 days, 1 day, it didn't matter. He was going to take the fight because 10 years he couldn't grab the brass ring. So when that door came knocking, he opened up that door and walked right through. The thing with Luke Rockhold is that I don't like him as a person, okay? I'm just going to be blatant and honest with it.
I don't like him as a person.
Let's be real why you don't like him as a person.
Because he's a womanizer.
Well, let's get to that story, okay?
Okay, go for it. Do you know the story? Because your wife could tell it very well.
I know a little bit about it. So, here's the story. Tristan doesn't like Luke Rockhold because I was at work one day. I came home. He was at home. He was watching TV. And so was my wife. And they were watching some show called A Million Millionaire's Matchmaker, some BS of that nature, that saw Luke Rockhold on this show. That show saw that Luke Rockhold is actually a douchebag and would use women. And it's one of the worst things ever. So they both absolutely hate Luke Rockhold for that. That's where his distaste comes for Luke Rockhold. That's where my wife's distaste comes from Luke Rockhold. Me? I just don't like the guy because he's kind of arrogant. But it is what it is. I still call a spade a spade because of the fact that the guy is legit. But who would have thought that Michael Bisping would have done what he did? Left hook, followed with another left hook, and just made him go. And then that was it. Like, it was over just like that. And for Michael Bisping to go ahead and feel that moment, it's great for him. For the fact that you look at everything Michael Bisping has done and everything we've said about Michael Bisping, I said it on my Facebook. Thank you, Michael Bisping, for proving me wrong. Thank you, Michael Bisping, for getting the opportunity to wear the strap as a middleweight champion. Good job for you. Thank you for not doing it in England. Thank you for doing it on normal grounds. But here's the question for you. Are you ready for Jacare? Are you ready for the match that I think that he should get? You know, Dan Henderson on his knockout of Hector Lombard.
We've both been saying this.
Said that I think this may be my last fight. Unless
something comes knocking on his door that piques his interest.
Well, the
video, you know what piques his interest?
The video's out. When he looked at and stared down Michael Bisping in the post-fight press conference, that, you know what? He may want that fight. If I'm UFC, because of everything that Dana White or Dan Henderson has done for Dana White, that this should be on a go-forward basis. That this should be no doubt in my mind. Dan Henderson needs that title shot. Dan Henderson needs that title shot against Michael Bisping. That's what needs to happen.
There's no question that fight needs to happen. I was thinking that there's only three options for Michael Bisping. Luke Rockhold, Dan Henderson, Jacare Souza. Those are the only three options you have.
Yep.
And the only option I really want to see is the last hurrah of Dan Henderson.
It just makes for a good story.
But then, I good story, good everything, good buildup is Dan Anderson versus Michael Bisping. But then I look at, well, you have Jacare out there, right?
Yeah.
What does he do psychologically and personally?
If he doesn't,
what does he
shot?
Do if he gets jumped by a Dan Anderson?
Because here's what's going to happen. Let's just be real, okay? Because it's me, know me for the more that you watch the show, I would not be surprised if Dan Anderson gets the title shot against Michael Bisping, and then at the end of the day, Jacare gets Luke Rockhold for the number one contendership. Because Chris Weidman is not going to be given an opportunity until he's proven that he can stay healthy. He has to stay healthy. And if he's not, then you know what? Then you need to reevaluate the situation. But that's the issue right now I see with Chris Weidman. But for the fans, for everybody that's been around this combat sports game, it needs to be Dan Henderson. It just makes for an amazing storyline. But it's probably not going to happen. Reality of the situation, it's going to be Luke Rockhold. It's going to be Michael Bisping 3. It's going to be a rubber match. And this rubber match is going to take place in New York. Let's just be real.
They're going to go to New York and they're going to have it out. That's where it's going to be. You know what? This kind of reminds me of the Rocky and Apollo Creed story, because yes, it could be Rocco versus Michael Bisping 3, but there was also a closed door fight between the both two. There was a closed door fight between Rocky and Apollo Creed. Just saying. And we want to know who won that one. Wait, we do know who won that one.
Yes, we do.
Michael Bisping says he won that one.
Right.
What stays in the gym doesn't stay in the gym.
No, of course not. Why would it?
But yeah, so it was a good UFC 199 card. It saw a lot of stuff going down. A lot of interesting fights and wins and storylines coming out that makes you wonder, well, what's next? What is next? Because after just sheer 15 months ago, the beast incarnate, Brock Lesnar.
Okay, Paul Heyman.
Heyman also announced his retirement on ESPN. We're going to shed some light on that. Among much, much more with the Sports Wars with Sean and Tristan Ducross right up after this brief break.
Excelsior, Imperis Rex, live long and prosper, up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to FanboyNation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the Ducross Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the Ducross Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back. We are the Sports Warriors, Sean and Tristan Ducross, the one and only, where real opinions, real talk, mesh with real-time combat sports talk. We're your boys right here on YouTube.tv, as well as on Blog Talk Radio. So you want to hear just the audio, you don't want to see our identical twin pretty faces, then you can head over onto Blog Talk Radio / the Ducross Bros. You can hit us up on Facebook, Sean and Tristan Ducross. You can hit us up on the MMAcommunity.com forums. We're going to be on there. Twitter, at the Ducross Bros.
Fightbook MMA.
Right, Fightbook MMA. Fanboy Nation, all day, every day. Sean, Brock Lesnar. Wait. Hold up. Brock Lesnar joins the UFC after an arm wrestling match with Vince McMahon. This is one of the silliest things I've ever seen. It's like the UFC 200 card is already jam-packed to the gills. Why do you need Brock Lesnar? See, even you can't say it without saying Brock Lesnar. Because you've heard it for so long from Paul Heyman that it's just the only way you can announce Brock Lesnar.
Hey, Sean.
Keep talking for a minute because I'm going to be the audience for a minute because this is what's going to exactly happen. Keep talking for a minute. So when Brock Lesnar comes in.
Suplex City.
Brock Lesnar is going to end
up. Suplex City.
Brock Lesnar.
Suplex City.
Brock Lesnar.
Suplex City.
Brock Lesnar.
Suplex City.
Down in Las Vegas.
Suplex City.
Exit.
MGM Grand.
No, T-Mobile.
T-Mobile Arena.
So he's gonna get. So he. I wish he could take Mark Hunt to Suplex City at Exit T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Dude, do you? Okay. Let's just.
July 9th.
Let's pause this real quick.
So Brock Lesnar goes in there and literally takes Mark Hunt to Suplex City. Can you just imagine how electric that arena would be? Like, if you see Brock Lesnar, the 6'5", 265-pound man-child, beast incarnate, the one that took the one, that put the 1 in 21, that was the man that did it at WrestleMania.
This man goes in there and suplexes Mark Hunt all the way back to Hawaii or wherever he came from. Like, the odd Samoan from New Zealand. If he does that, all media outlets, all fans are going to go absolutely crazy for Brock Lesnar.
If Brock Lesnar,
I think the greatest thing ever is that Mark Hunt walks in there, 15 seconds into the fight, cool clocks him with the right hand, and I'm out.
He's going to end up having a Mark Hunt is going to need to come up with a shot, a la Babe Ruth, call him a shot, and then go ahead, and when he hits him with that right, he's got to now develop a walk-off. You know how everybody hits a home run during a walk-off, and they've got their taunts of how they throw a bat or a bat flip? He needs to end up developing his own walk-off punch. Like, maybe he needs to do the haka. Maybe that's what he needs to do at the end of the fight. Would he really bring out Roman Reigns and the Usos?
That would be kind of cool.
It's UFC 200.
That'd be kind of cool.
Brock Lesnar is from the WWE. Why not?
Brock Lesnar comes out with Paulie Dangerously and the fake phone.
Hey, I would not put past him, okay? Fanboy Nation said that he walks down with Paulie Dangerously. I would not put it past him because it is UFC 200.
That's so crazy.
They are going to go for broke in terms of what they're going to do for the whole production.
But
you saw Conor McGregor come out with Sinead O'Connor during his fight. So you are only going to expect that at the T-Mobile Arena. It's going to be larger than life.
Very true.
It's going to be big. So if he's coming out with Paul Heyman, psyching him up, a la maybe Goldberg-esque in the back room, then you're going to see maybe the Usos
Brock
coming
Lesnar
out doing the haka.
Brock Lesnar kicking the door down like Goldberg or
headbutting
the door coming out and walking down to the octagon.
Yeah.
Or how about doing the Tiger fist pump after the knockout? That's an interesting one.
Or how about doing the Mike Stanton wiggle? That would be epic. So it'd be interesting to see what's going to happen. But this thing boggles my mind why you give Brock Lesnar versus Mark Hunt. I guess because it's UFC 200 and you've got to make it worthwhile.
Dude, I was thinking, okay, Brock Lesnar comes back at UFC 200. Let's see who you can put him up against because I'm thinking, okay, easy law. You don't want him to face a guy that has the capability of just knocking him out. You don't want that. So I'm thinking Lob, right? The first guy that comes to my mind is Fabio Melanato. I'm thinking that guy. I'm thinking that would be a matchup. Brock Lesnar comes in, destroys him.
I was thinking just a guy out of retirement in Sean Carwin.
And Carwin would probably beat him 10 bucks too.
Do the dab or the truffle shuffle? Do the dab. Oh, yeah. Just nailed it. What's up? I don't know what the truffle shuffle is, but I bet you 10-1 we're going to see Brock Lesnar do the break legs. The weeble wobble. Isn't that right? I call it the weeble wobble because it's funny when your legs break and you just kind of go, hello. So, UFC 200, hashtag weeble wobble. Dude, but you're looking at a 42-year-old that's on a 2-fight win streak versus a guy that retired ultimately 15 months ago, took a fight against Alistair Overeem after 6 months after having half his colon removed, to losing his last two fights before just ultimately one and done, losing to Overeem via body punches. I only can attribute that to what half his colon being removed. And when you get knocked out by body punches, Cain Velasquez knocked him out. I'm thinking, what's left for this guy? You know, he said that the retirement haunted him. Well, dang it, why did you even announce retirement 15 months ago? But also, if the thing haunted him, then why in the world is he only coming back for one fight, turning right back around and going to the WWE for SummerSlam?
Because like he said, he got paid.
I don't care if your mama paid you underneath the table. That's the thing that bothers me, is that he wants to be classified as a legit fighter. How can you even be looked as a legit fighter if you go right back to the WWE and lose, knowing that you could probably beat a... You could probably break... Like, dude, it's so weird watching Nakamura, and it's like, dude, in reality, he would so break their arms because they have no idea how to absorb that move. So it's like, what are you doing? You're discrediting the combat sports of MMA. And yet, you're okaying him to come back. I'd be he got Mark Hunt. I'm happy Mark Hunt took this fight. Because he's going to put that fist in his face, and it's going to be like, I told you.
U.S. though, is ridiculously stacked right now. And I don't put it past them at all for what they have done.
But what got
money runs everything.
But what got past people, oh, yes, is the fact that Brock Lesnar was announced by Ariel Helwani. And Ariel Helwani got his credentials stripped and essentially banned from the UFC. And Dana White told TMZ, oh, Helwani, you can go ahead and still cover the fight if you buy tickets. So now the media wants to boycott UFC, saying that they should boycott UFC. So what will happen at UFC 200? Will we see Ariel Helwani reinstated? Ariel Helwani says no. What type of media coverage will they have at the fight for this? Would you really risk boycotting the UFC 200 or the UFC for something so big and extravaganza as that fight card is going to be in Las Vegas? Is that something you're really going to risk? It's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen with the media. I'm 50-50 on the blame. And when you look at this, is that UFC states that Ariel Helwani should have known better, should have given them a little bit more respect with before announcing it. But then if you look at the journalistic side, if he's got creditors, if he's got people that want to go ahead and give him the sources and confirm the sources, as a journalist, you're going to run with that. I get both of the sides of the spectrum here. I get both where UFC was coming from. I get where Ariel Helwani is coming from. I just disagree with how it was handled.
Absolutely.
Go ahead. You know what? If you want to be booty tickled about it a little bit, then go ahead and kick him out. I get that. But don't strip the guy that's been with the UFC, that has covered the UFC, that's been one of the pioneers in journalistic reporting for MMA.
Six-time journalist of the year.
And do this to him. That's my two cents on this.
You know, I'm over at the MMAcommunity.com, and I'm talking to a lot of people about the Ariel Helwani situation. And I say that it's 50-50. It's amazing how pro, you know, everybody is for Helwani. And I get it. But, you know, to make this bigger than what it is, we all as journalists know what our job entails. We know
the risk that comes with
the
it.
The risk that comes in it. Like, Sean and I, we know that, you know, being very opinionated, being outspoken might rub fans or organizations wrong. It might. But we are the ones that if the referee does something wrong, we're going to tell you like it is. If a fight does something wrong, we're going to tell you like it is.
Like I've always
don't
said.
Don't give us the ammunition.
Being in the media,
don't give us something if you don't want us to talk about it.
So I'm not going to touch on anything else about that because that's my two cents on that.
Absolutely.
But RFA 38 went down, and it was one of the more
Goodnight, Irene!
It was one of the more promising cards that I've seen quite some time with RFA, and to get name dropped by Pat Miletich and
Michael Chavalello,
it was one of those things that it humbled me a little bit to know that we were talking to them at Access TV Media Day, and we were talking about Muay Thai
and we saw a clinic by Vinicius Zani versus Joe Murphy versus baby KJ Noon, right? But it was one of those things that Zani kicked the snot out of Murphy's leg, and that's when it was dropped, was the fact that we talked about Muay Thai. When you get a person that can know, that knows Muay Thai and the ability and the strikes and the technique that goes behind it, if you could stand there and put on a showcase, you will dissect and murder somebody in that octagon.
The fact that he took the knees out.
I mean, to see the knee buckle.
Yeah.
And for Murphy to not make any adjustments, not to check a leg kick, and Zani was just teeing off. That's what was striking the most, is because to see Joe Murphy, what at one point was thought to be a thoroughbred in RFA, to all of a sudden to face a newcomer like Zani, and again to see a clinic be put on, is why I love to watch combat sports and talk about it.
Absolutely.
Is because Zani went to work. And we sat at the Access Media table, myself, you, Robert Sambo of Fanboy Nation, with Pat Miletich and Michael. And we were sitting there, and there was a media guy right next to us that had no idea about what Muay Thai was. And it was fun because we got to talk to him and educate him about more about the Muay Thai style. And you look at that home main event, and it was just, you know, you've got solid kicks, and you know it's starting to take effect when you start to see the leg basically almost hyperextend and lock up, because it's just taking a beating and a pounding. And when you look at it and you see that leg, it's just like you cringe. And he was just absorbing so much punishment. That fight stood out. Then Skippy Cohen from MMA Madhouse said the other standout was Albert Morales.
Oh, God.
Yes. The save of the night? Albert Morales came into that fight and destroyed Mario Israel in T-minus 2 seconds, followed with a leg kick and a straight left. It just went, wow. To the point that Dana White, who was there, came in and awarded him a contract right then and there.
Dude, Dean made the save of the night during that fight.
When he jumped in there and literally picked that off and threw him to the side to stop it,
that was the save of the night.
So he's just going to keep wailing on him. So
bravo for Albert Morales in getting a UFC contract, doing in dramatic fashion,
and stopping his two-fight losing streak in 20 seconds.
Well, he was 5-0 coming into the fight. He was undefeated. So Albert Morales walked out undefeated, walks into the UFC undefeated. So it'll be interesting to see what's coming up next for Albert Morales and what his UFC future will be. Then you also have to look at the other one. Jason Gonzalez versus Chris Padilla was probably one of my fights of the evening. And when you look at it and you see what was going on and you see this fight, Jason Gonzalez came back and won the fight in dramatic fashion. Dude getting worked on the whole entire fight, and somehow in the matter of moments, lights out. Came out of nowhere and ended it. Serious? Just like that? And I apologize. My bad.
Yeah, told you he's 6-0.
Yeah, 6-0. My bad.
But Chris Padilla has the best name ever. Taco Padilla. Dude, but Michael Chavello told us that Taco was the man to watch, and yet...
Well, he wasn't the man to watch.
Well, he was the man to watch. Because,
for the first round?
Yeah, and he kind of gassed out. And then Gonzalez came back, got his feet underneath him, returned fire, and just beat up Taco.
So, I the fact that you get RFA 38... and they put on such a performance. And to see it was very interesting. And it was fun to watch that whole entire night. Skippy in the chat room says that
Dana White was not there because Albert was on the show last night and told the story. Only Sarah saw it. From what we were told, he was there filming. So I guess he came on after the fight is what I'm getting from Skippy. Is what
right,
Albert
because
Morales
he was
said.
There. He was there at the event. He was filming. We've seen the video and stuff like that, so he was there filming.
Whether somebody didn't see it, saw it, whatever, he was there most of the night. So, but he was there filming for his documentary clip that he had, that he has going on. So, RFA continues to develop fighters in such a fast fashion, and I'd love to see it. But even June 10th, we're going to touch on this a little bit, is that CEFMA is also headlining a lightweight champion rematch that saw Ryan Sanders last time fight Luis Felix and won via chokeout submission, but missed weight, so it wasn't for a title. Now he gets the rematch, and yes, it will be for the title. So it's going to be interesting to see that Luis Felix versus Ryan Sanders 2. And what many people could be classified as the fight of the night candidate. Because then you have Luis Corpe versus Julian Lane. Another lightweight matchup at 155. Both could be doing huge, huge things. Because Corpe is predicting a third round KO of Julian Lane. Who, let me just make perfectly clear, Lane's bigger, has the reach, former UFC product. Don't be calling out somebody that if you can't even beat somebody, don't call out somebody that has credentials, that has been continuously establishing himself, and he's a former world champion.
It's going to be an interesting thing. I'm looking forward to seeing CES, this fight card. Again, I agree with you. Ryan Sanders versus Luis Felix is going to be an interesting fight as it's a rematch for the 155 title. The last time Ryan Sanders fought against Felix was injured in the fight, and thus he won the Ryan Sanders won the first bout. So it's going to be an interesting because both fighters can either finish standing up or finish on the ground. I'm more certain that Ryan Sanders wants to finish this fight, wants the knockout. This fight will be on its feet. The other guy you want to make watch a little bit is Marquise Brewster
making his debut
with 6-1 amateur. He has 2 knockouts on his resume, 4 via decision. He's facing a Canadian from Germany, named Kasbakov. And Kasbakov has 5 wins, 3 via KO, 2 via submission. He's 1-1 as a pro. He can take the fight either way. So looking at this fight, this might be the fight of the night because these two guys may want to just stand there and slug it out. So if you're looking for an interesting card that you haven't really seen or looking for something different for MMA, look at no further than June 10th on Access TV and watch CES 36 going down. This is going to be an interesting fight card. So that's it for our show. That's a wrap. We out of here. We're the new Cross Brothers Sports Warriors. Catch us on www.thehotspotshow.com. You can even hit us up on Twitter, at The Ducross Bros. Facebook us, Cross, like our fans page, The Ducross Brothers. Until next time, we're out.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound, get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan Ducross.